Hello and welcome to part one of this two-part New Vision podcast series, which shines a spotlight on COVID-19, lockdown, security forces, brutality in Africa. Richard Wetaya is my name. When President Museveni of Uganda ordered a nationwide lockdown to curb the spread of COVID-19 in Uganda in April, 36-year-old Felix Okir, a social worker in Bukedea in the east of Uganda, was apprehensive. Okir, who works in Soroti, 68 kilometers away, wondered how he would provide for his family with public transport banned and with no assured monthly income aside of his irregular NGO freelance work earnings. 2 weeks into the lockdown, Okir attempted fate and traveled in the afternoon to Soroti with a full transportation truck.
I had to go and sign some money from the office, but of course I left early enough. I got the truck which takes food. We reached Soroti even before time.
When he got to Soroti, he was able to sign forms that meant he could withdraw some of his mega savings, but it never occurred to him that on his return journey to Bukedea, he, the truck driver, and two others would be violently arrested for moving past the 7 p.m. curfew deadline time. Okir, who was released a day later, insists they arrived in Bukedea before the curfew started.
We were arrested before the time for curfew at around 6:40, and I still had some good 20 minutes to reach home.
In the weeks after the Ugandan government imposed the lockdown, principally the dusk to dawn curfew, several other Ugandans were arrested for failing to adhere to the no movement beyond 7 p.m. regulations.
Stand up. Hold.
If there is a permission, it is on the people's request. Have you heard? Come on, you can go and put your feet up. See your computer, Ben Pembenu. On a ski,
I'm not here. Now, if you let your police and get water.
Several media houses carried reports of the arrests, but I'll delve into that later. As a response to the devastating COVID-19 pandemic, many countries across the globe imposed radical and extensive containment measures such as dusk to dawn curfews or various extents, social distancing, public transport suspension, frequent hand washing as a means of mitigating the pandemic. In several countries, enforcements of some of the containment measures, principally the nighttime curfews, have been met with criticism.
Beating people is not part of security work. Security work, you tell people to go home. If they refuse, you arrest them. Arrest them with a police person and you put a handcuff. But you don't beat. I don't want to see a security person beating people.
Seasoned Ugandan lawyer Dan Walyemera weighs in.
There is no justification anywhere in the world for extrajudicial killings. There is no justification anywhere in the world to torture a citizen or to take their life without any due process of the law taking place.
Several security forces in Africa have been accused of heavy-handedness, which experts say is another damning indictment of the human rights situation on the continent. Nicolas Opio, a renowned Ugandan human rights lawyer, notes that while most of the COVID-19 containment measures were necessary, the excesses of some of the security forces enforcing them raise suspicions.
Of course, the measures taken by the state, namely instituting guidelines to prevent the massive spread of the pandemic, were necessary measures. Measures to control population movement, measures to control mass gathering, were in principle necessary movement for the control of the pandemic. But in that necessity, we have begun to see excesses, the overzealous nature of an already brutal and repressive state machinery in killing people for the slightest violation of the guidelines, even where educating people would have been the better option. In the context of Uganda, really, COVID happens also in a period of national elections, a period of hot political contestation. And we cannot help but suspect that the violent reaction of the authorities was in fact an attempt to further repress people who would otherwise be seen as possible voters for the opposition in the country.
The courts of public opinion, driven of course by the media, in countries where law enforcement atrocities have been reported, have pronounced themselves on the security forces' excesses, like in Kenya.
Afadhali corona ituue kuliko hii.
Tumepigwa, tunaambiwa tufunge foleni moja, tumeovercrowd. Sasa tunaguzana, tuwauliza, tuwazuia corona, ama tuwafanya nini sasa?
Some analysts in the security forces have propounded the argument that some of the desperate and draconian measures used by some security forces as they enforce the COVID-19 measures may have been occasioned by the desperate times COVID-19 created. Opio, however, takes issue.
There cannot be an excuse for violence against citizens by state actors in the way that we have witnessed in Uganda. We must condemn, we must repudiate, we must reject any excuse for these actions. These actions are inexcusable, and the people who are involved ought to be subjected to the fullest extent of the law, because they undermine the law, they undermine people's confidence in the state, and in fact provide a more potent situation than the pandemic could provide in the country. A population dissatisfied, a population repressed, a population on whom forces unleashed in the long run are a source for insecurity in the country.
Seasoned Ugandan lawyer Don Walyemera says while COVID-19 created new challenges for policing in Uganda and other places in Africa because of, among other things, the lack of knowledge of proper human rights approaches and the use of force during pandemics, there is no justification for the excesses that were perpetrated.
There is no justification whatsoever, not even the COVID-19 regulations. So there is no justification for whatsoever for the behavior that we have just seen, not only in Uganda, but in many other African countries.
Across Africa, thousands were arrested for curfew violations, a practice Michelle Bachelet, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, called unnecessary and unsafe, as prisons and jails were high-risk environments that could potentially aid the spread of the coronavirus. With some prisons in Uganda like Pese in Gulu and Kaiti in Namutumbo reporting cases of COVID-19, it's not in Uganda's or in any other country's interest to have many people coming into contact with the criminal justice system during this public health emergency. In April, the United Nations named several countries where it was concerned that the use of excessive force in the enforcement and maintenance of lockdown measures was posing a risk to people's lives. In Africa, countries such as Kenya, Nigeria, and South Africa were cited. In Kenya, the containment measures began with a wave of police crackdowns. Human Rights Watch reported that 6 people lost their lives due to police brutality within the first 10 days of the Dusk to Dawn curfew in Kenya. In South Africa, reliable media reports in March indicated that the police used rubber bullets, tear gas, water bombs, and whips to enforce social distancing. According to the UN, more than 17,000 people have been arrested in the country for breaking lockdown regulations. In Uganda, contrary to some international media reports, and some people may take this statement with a grain of salt, the security forces, principally the police, have for the most part acted within the confines of the law as they enforced the COVID-19 measures, and the use of excessive force was not exactly widespread. Now, that statement is not a vindication of the Ugandan police, and we could debate this all day. But if we are to look at the records, the excesses reported in the media, like the killing of Emmanuel Tegu, the student from Makerere, and the 12 Ugandans killed in June, were all perpetrated by the local defense unit forces, an auxiliary force. In the nature of things, the local defense unit force found itself in the crosshairs of the Ugandan parliament and several civil society organizations. Needless to add, General David Muhoozi, the Ugandan Army's Chief of Defense Forces, later apologized for the excesses perpetrated by members of the security forces. Opio, however, says the local defense unit forces should have never been deployed.
In a country with a functioning police force, with a functioning military, there was no justification for the recruitment, arming, and deployment of an auxiliary force. We have made the point time and time and again that as we approach elections, we tend to recruit these paramilitary groups, and they become the source of violence and for repression while supporting ruling party candidates. So there was, in the very first place, no need for recruiting an auxiliary force, especially that which is ill-trained, illiterate, poorly paid. So the withdrawal is welcome, but they should never have, in the very first place, been deployments of LDUs.
It's a contention that fellow lawyer Wayemera concurs with.
The deployment of local defense units was obviously the wrong decision. The international instruments on policing do not allow people who have been ill-trained to do police work. The military is not even actually allowed to do police work because the military is trained to kill. The military is trained to maintain our international borders. When these LDUs are engaged in these extrajudicial killings, when they're engaged in torture, it's not only the individual LDUs that are accountable, but even the commanding officers are accountable under international law. And even under the domestic law, under our Anti-Torture Act, not only is the person who commits the crime accountable, but even the commanding officer is accountable. So whoever thought of withdrawing them from the streets did a wise thing.
In her paper entitled Policing the COVID-19 Pandemic in Nigeria, Nigerian scholar Ruth Olafin makes a strong case for the training of security forces on the interpretation of COVID-19 lockdown regulations. Her other propositions are that standard operating procedures should be developed for the special task of policing the pandemic and respecting the rights of citizens in the discharge of their duties. This, in many respects, seems valid for the African context, given the unprecedented challenges the COVID-19 outbreak has posed to African police forces and other law enforcement agencies across the globe. Thank you for listening to this edition of the New Vision Podcast. Join me next week for part 2.